This hour is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
Matt was playing well. You know, frankly, we've been struggling at third base a little bit. And so, you know, it's just the combination of the two things. You know, you think you could give Matt another shot. I mean, he's been down roughly a month. You know, put 75 or so plate appearances under his belt and did a nice job with that. And so, you know, time for another chance.
That was Craig Counsell before the game yesterday. Cubs get walked off by the Marlins by a final of 8-7. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Score, and we broadcast live from the Score Sunday Studios. Brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Jed Hoyer was on with Mully and Haw earlier this morning and had a lot to say about not just Matt Shaw, but how to address the needs of the team moving forward. Matt Shaw, as we said before, had a really good showing at the major league level yesterday when you consider that he's eliminated this leg kick, what, two games previously in his minor league career, Marshall? So not for nothing, but that's at least he's showing it at the major league level as well, and it was paying off. The leg kick has turned into a step.
All right, now, how obsessed would you say you are with the leg kick aspect of this? Because that's what we learned, is that the whole time he was there, they were trying to get him to change it. He wouldn't change it. Started to hit a little bit without changing it. Then he finally was like, all right, I'll change it. And then they're like, all right, you can come back up now that you changed it.
I think the conditions and the terms of this exchange were very well defined.
I'm glad Matt Shaw is back with the big club. I think Matt Shaw can still have a great rookie season. I think Matt Shaw, as we know, documented, is not the first guy to be up at the majors his first time and have to be sent back down to work on something and then come back and look great. Pete Crow Armstrong, remember when he first came up?
Ian Happ.
When he first came up. There's so many examples of this, specifically with the Cubs, that you have to just be happy that he's back and is in a comfortable enough position to talk about what he changed and why he changed it, and that the Cubs are going to let him bat in that lower third of the order. See, what happened was he was set up for...
What happened was,
opening day, where did that man bat? Where was he in the lineup opening day?
Oh, he was cleanup, wasn't he?
Fifth. He batted fifth.
Yeah, that's... I was like, that's cleanup.
I was like, that's too much. Let's let this man settle in.
I just like how they're like, hey, eliminate the leg kick. Nope. Eliminate the leg kick. Nope. Do it. Eliminates the leg kick. Congratulations, you're back in the major leagues.
I fully expect this man, who ended yesterday batting 194 after a 2-4 day, to be back over the Mendoza line ASAP and to be making a push towards 250, 260.
Now that I know that there was pretty much one obvious directive, and that I'm going to be looking for that in his at-bats, even if he goes 0-4 today, I'm going to still be pleased, because do it. Don't do it. Don't do the leg. Don't do it. I know you want to kick. Don't.
But he'd been doing that in batting practice for days, maybe weeks, down in AAA.
Yeah, he was half.
And then in the game,
half agreeing.
And then in the game, he was like, I'm going to go ahead and kick it up a notch.
It's like mopping half the floor. You got to mop the whole floor. I love it. I love that we can talk about something fun that's enjoyable like this. And the beauty of all of it is that there were results. You know, there were extra base results. There were solid results. That's the fun part of this. But I go back to the discussion we had yesterday. When have you ever heard a commentator say, man, when he added in that leg kick, that's when the power really came?
I don't.
We all want to do it.
I don't know that. Because it's fun.
Like, I've been at Sluggers, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should add in this leg kick. Do you know what happened? No contact. Not even close.
Well, it's not for everyone. And that's what Matt Shaw's finding out. It's not for everyone. The leg kick's not for everyone.
It is not. How about we start with addressing that first? Matt Shaw and what Jed Hoyer had to say about him being a solution at third base for this team.
Well, certainly that's why we brought him back up. You know, he was... making good adjustments in Iowa. Obviously, you referenced, like, you know, having the leg kick be a little bit more controlled. And, you know, the hope certainly going into the season was that he would be able to handle that job. And that's the hope now. Last year, PCA got sent down, almost got sent down multiple times. If you think about his struggles in the first half, and then he played great in the second half. So it's hard to break into the big leagues now. And obviously, Matt had his struggles. And, you know, the hope is that he starts to get acclimated and figured out, because certainly I think our best lineup would be with him at third base. And as far as like at the deadline, I mean, I certainly you know, the pitching side is probably more obvious area to add than the position playing side. You know, obviously injuries and things will happen and that could change, but I think that'd be fairly obvious to look at and say right now, you know, our position playing group has been really good, really consistent. I think our at-bats from top to bottom have been excellent. So I think that's really been the strength of our team so far, and hopefully it continues.
He wants this to work out. That's the bottom line. He needs this to work out because as far as spending capital, as in prospects, on things to help the team, money, he's hoping third base is not an area in which he has to worry about. Now, it may end up being. They may find a chance where they can bolster that position, even if Matt Shaw is developing at the rate that they want. If this is a true go-for-it-all type season and they're willing to sell the farm, it may be multiple prospects going out for multiple positions. But I would rather the Cubs, in terms of trying to figure out how they can put themselves in best position to win the World Series, figure out the bullpen. That's one. Two, add a star pitcher, a swing and miss king, if you will. Somebody that you can run out there. Jesus Luzardo would have looked good in a Cubs uniform. Look, somebody you can run out there and fill the position that Justin Steele no longer occupies. And now we know it's going to be a little bit later on Shota Managa even. I think there's other things that need to be addressed well before third base is something they go externally to solve the problem for.
Here's my issue with the Matt Shaw piece of this. Is number one, he's your top prospect. Yes, he should be at the major league level, especially at number two, a position of need that is a huge position of need in the league, as we have discussed. Earlier this week, Bob Nightingale talked about the Cubs' interest in Ryan McMahon of the Rockies. But here's my concern. How many teams are going to be interested in him? It's going to be multiple, and that's a big part of this, too. Nightingale also mentioned the Dodgers in this. I think you can throw that name into anybody who might be a trade target. But even a guy like Nolan Arenado, who just requested to be put down in the lineup because he understands who he is now, I expect is going to get trade interest because other teams are going to see that a change of scenery might be the answer to what they may need at third base. When you consider the market, you have to have Matt Shaw performing in order for the Cubs to help ease some of that concern. And yes, to focus on the other positions of need. So what do we know about Porter Hodge right now? Who is the closer, according to Hoyer?
I think that's probably what happens so often at bullpens. I feel like we had gotten into a pretty good groove, sort of like Palencia and Keller and Hodge and the backs. The two lefties have been throwing really well. And I feel like that formula has been working well for us. And obviously, Porter, you know, went down with an oblique injury. We're hopeful it's not too serious, but you know, certainly we can't play shorthanded, you know, back there. And so now we have to figure that out again. So I think that's just the nature of how it's going to be. We're going to have guys step up. We're going to candidly need some more innings out of our starters. Last night we were asking for 4 1/3 scoreless out of our bullpen, and you know, we almost got there, but not quite. But we're going to need to have these guys get into the sixth, maybe in the seventh, you know, in order to rest these guys a little bit. Otherwise, they get overtaxed. But, you know, I think, you know, Brad Keller's been throwing the ball well. Really, Daniel has been almost flawless until last night. So, you know, we've had guys throwing the ball well. We just need more guys to step up, and hopefully Porter's not injured for too long.
So a groove is the closer? It's got to be Palencia. By default, it has to be Palencia. It's got to be the guy who's throwing 100. What are you laughing about, Robbie?
The groove just has a great changeup. Well, it's just an incredible.
But when he says pretty good groove, I was like, were you in a pretty good groove? I don't remember a time in which I could say the Cubs bullpen was in a, quote, pretty good groove, because that's what he just said.
This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTooth.com. Save on dental implants today. I'm messing with Jed Hoyer a little bit there, and I understand what he's saying.
Are y'all all in agreement on the whole Daniel Palencia has got to be the closer right now? Because there's a strong argument to be made for Brad Keller.
There's a strong argument to be made for Brad Keller, but when do you want him to start the save? Like the seventh?
Okay, no, I think it's just prioritizing who do you want to go 7, 8, 9.
Right, but I'm saying, unfortunately, given how Keller, how he's used and what you know him to do, I think he's still your person who can throw more innings than others.
Oh no, I
think he's a long man still.
No, that's not how I see him at all.
He
was a starter for many years.
But
I'm team Palencia, by the way. He throws gas. Yesterday was a baseball thing. Baseball happens just like he says. He's still my closer.
If you look at that pitch selection, you 100% see why one of those balls was turned on for extra bases. It was only a matter of time.
So let's go back. So he threw 24 pitches, 15 for strikes in that outing. I understand why he was tired. Plus the extra amp of being in the ninth inning in a clear one-run save. Not just a regular save situation, but a one-run save situation.
In a ballpark where, by the way, you look like you have 10 million miles of outfield. Was I the only one thinking that?
It does look like a bigger...
Miami looks like the largest park in the history of America.
But back to my Brad Keller point, you said... I know you used to be... A lot of closers used to be starters. His last seven outings, he's pitched one inning.
But I still think that you can't have him do the ninth when you need him to do so many other things.
No, I don't need that. No. At some point, you have to make a decision who's doing the ninth. That's the first question. The answer to that question is, in my opinion, Brad Keller. And then Palencia can be the eighth inning guy or the seventh inning guy. And then where do you want to put Julian Merriweather?
I don't know right now. I was as simple as, does this person throw 100? Ninth. Like that's
I don't think it's that easy. I don't think it's that. I understand why you and Robbie feel the way you do.
Listen to the Jesus Sanchez at bat. Well, number one was a 101 four seam, 101 mile an hour four seam fastball ball. Number two, 99 mile an hour four seam fastball, also high up in the, or that one was low. So that was, actually, no, the second pitch of that at bat was still high. So he goes super high, still high with a fastball at 99. Third pitch of the at bat, he goes low and outside. Arguably could have been a strike if the buffer zone from last year were intact. Also a four-seamer at 99. Everybody's calling this a slider, but at least the way it was tracked by MLB, 98, heart of the zone, center part of the strike zone, four-seam fastball is how they put it. I don't know who's throwing a slider at 98.
If you're throwing a slider at 98, that means you're throwing 105. That means you're in that's Chapman area, right? Like prime, yes, Chapman? Yeah. Prime Chapman.
Andrew Cashner, the former Cubs prospect at one point, I think, could throw a slider at that speed. So that's what you're looking at there. But that is a discussion to me. That's a, hey, don't throw all the same pitch, especially when you go high twice and then the mistake is in the center part of the zone. And I get it. I know Council said he was trying to throw that pitch for a ball. Probably your first mistake, but I get it. You want somebody to swing at a slider in the dirt to entice a swing. But man, I think that's a fixable problem based on that discussion and that piece of it right
okay,
now.
Okay, so who do you want to throw the eighth? If Palencia is your ninth guy, we can work this together.
Oh, terrifying. If I think it might be Thielbar, even though he went 1 1/3 yesterday and was in a different.
Isn't he the only
scenario.
Lefty in the pen, though?
Right now?
Yeah. So,
then where's Ryan Pressly?
Like, maybe Pomeranz. Pomeranz is your eighth inning guy.
Oh, Pomeranz. I'm sorry. That's my fault on Pomeranz.
But like, Pressly went from the closer coming into the year to now, like, what is he?
Maybe he's your seventh or he's your eighth, and then Pomeranz is the combo.
I think they're trying to get to the point where he's back at the back end of the bullpen, Pressly. And that's why that appearance yesterday was so important.
Yeah, and Pomeranz is a lefty, too.
Yeah, that's, so yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's Pressly, PPP, Pressly, Pomeranz, Palencia.
So Keller's not even in the mix.
Keller.
You down with PPP?
Keller's, why do you hate Brad Keller?
I don't. I think he's my I need you in whatever scenario I need you in guy. He's my glad I called that guy. Why are you annoyed by this?
I just think right now he's been the best pitcher of late, so let him cook in the back of the game, because you need guys who can actually cook in the back of the game.
But what if I need him to throw three innings?
You know what I've seen a lot of, and this is like yesterday when I got home, and I heated up some leftovers, right? And I try to time it. I put like the glass of water in the back in the microwave. Put the glass of water to because otherwise I don't want my
to steam it.
Yeah, I don't want my food to be super chewy or anything. And I take the power level down and cook it a little bit longer, so the center is like not cold.
That's some skill right there.
I mean, I've been microwaving since I was like 7 or 8 years old. And so the first round didn't work out for me. It was still cold in the middle. It was mac and cheese, and the mac and cheese was still cold in the middle. And I was like, I got to do it again. So I had to do it like two more times. But guess what? It wasn't chewy. It was perfectly good. Like, it tasted like it did when I got it And it was perfect. We're talking about these players, these pitchers in the bullpen, and we don't quite know how to put them in the microwave and use them. Like, get them to where we need them to be.
Yeah, so, that's life in baseball.
It is life in baseball, but I'm saying...
Unless you're like the Brewers bullpen that Council had, where you knew exactly who was throwing 7, 8, 9.
The most concerning thing that was said today, and we need to play this sound before we get too close to the break, is talking about the bullpen itself and what they would do as far as pulling the trigger on something externally. And I don't know that I love Jed Hoyer's answer on this.
Listen, I think there's no question that... the bullpen is going to be aided by outside help, whether that's big transactions or small. I think there's no question we're going to continue to add guys. And Pomerantz is a example. We added him from Seattle, just like we did with Tyson Miller a year ago. And you just got to keep churning through relievers. I think as far as larger transactions, that doesn't really start probably until mid to late June at the earliest. It's just the nature of it. And I think when you look around baseball now, there's a lot of teams that are in the, that believe they're in the race, that feel like they have a chance. That's one area that baseball is a little different right now than it has been in other years, where, the sellers are less obvious. And so I do think that thinking about big external transactions, that's really call at least a month away, if not more. And so I think we got to focus on smaller transactions, and we got to focus on getting our guys healthy and having our own guys be effective.
You know what I heard? Bullpen is expensive. That's what I heard.
There are, to his point, there are 6 teams out of 30 right now in Major League Baseball who are not within 5 games of a playoff spot. Only 6 teams.
One of those is the Orioles, right? That's where I would start.
Yes, one of those is the Orioles. Another is the White Sox. The other teams that fit into that category are the Washington Nationals, the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Colorado Rockies, and of course, the Miami Marlins.
Womp womp. Do we want to get to this PCA sound before the break? Do we have time? Or at least the leadoff?
Yeah.
Let's hear what Jed Hoyer quickly had to say about who's batting leadoff, because our next guest in the next segment has something to do with that. PCA versus Ian Happ. Go.
I think you can definitely do that job for sure. I think we have a couple really good options. I think Ian did a great job in that spot. He sees so many pitches. He gets on base. I think when you have him and Tucker, hitting 1-2. There's just so much traffic on the bases for the other guys. I think it really helps. And then with Pete, Pete's a different style of hitter. It's just he's dangerous right away. The way he's hitting power, and obviously, if he gets on base, he creates havoc. So I think we have two really good options, and unclear how we'll go forward. My guess is that Ian will start leading off again, and Pete will probably not go quite as far down in the order. But obviously Craig and I will talk about that. But I think that the position has evolved. Honestly, how much criticism we got for trying, Kyle Schwarber in that role. I remember in Boston, we got a lot of criticism for putting Kevin Youkilis in that role, and people thought that was kind of crazy. And I do think that now, Shohei Ohtani, is leading off, and it's not a surprise to anyone that you would put a huge power hitter in. This is a guy that's dangerous at the top of the lineup. And Schwarber's not doing it this year, but he did it in the past with Philly. So, certainly I think to myself, if you're a pitcher, starting off a game and, you're worried about your first pitch of the game getting hit for a homer, it's unsettling. And so I do think that that's getting your best hitters the most at-bats and also having some fear in the opposing pitcher right away, I think there's real value in that.
That was Jed Hoyer talking about who's going to bat leadoff. And oh, by the way, Kyle Schwarber hitting home run number 300. Do you know how long it went? Did you hear about that?
I'm guessing over 400 feet.
466.
So what? It was no doubter, is what you're saying?
I can't even compute that distance. You might as well have said 11 billion. It's like that time Giancarlo Stanton hit that 500 one, and I was like, where did it go?
They hit balls very hard, very violently.
It's a lovely thing. But Jed has a point. You know who also has a point and can help us with this? Ian Happ, just activated off of the injured list. We talk to him next. Raheem Ian Harris on the score.
Layla Raheemi, Marshall Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The talent that's here and the talent that is continuing to develop here. You obviously have some mainstay guys like Ian Happ.
Ian Happ. Cubs all-star outfielder.
Driven in the air, right field deep, back toward the wall. It's got a chance. Gone. Home run, Ian Happ.
Absolutely crushed that ball.
What I love about Ian is very dedicated and serious about his craft.
Gold Glove Award winner.
Soto drills one deep to left, leaping up and snagging it is Ian Happ roaming toward left center. What a catch by Ian Happ.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
I carried John Lester's speaker.
Of course
ABL
he loved
speaker
it.
For 2 or 3 years, and I loved it.
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Here's a man that probably has 5 fresh pots a day.
Ian Happ on 670 The Score.
We toast you, Ian Happ.
Ian's going to be active tonight. Welcome back.
Yeah, that's right. We decided to put 2 of Ian Happ's opens together as we broadcast live from the Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. We go to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. That is where we do welcome back Ian Happ, even though we've been talking to him the whole time, but welcome back into the livelihood of being available. Ian, let's start with that oblique. How are you feeling?
Good. Feeling good. Feeling ready to go. Excited to be back. Boys did a great job, and I'm ready to be back in the thick of it.
Was there any concern at all that you wouldn't be back today? I mean, you said it pretty definitively last week. Hey, I'll be back Tuesday.
No, I think whenever you're going through rehab and something, you know, you want it to be the shortest stint possible, and you want to be back, and you want to be committed to that, you know, going through the rehab process and say, we'll see. It's, you know, a lot of it's mental and having a goal in mind. And so, you know, I felt like, and we did the right stuff and could make it happen by today, and happy that it worked out that way.
I still think it's impressive because I know there have been many, 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 many times in baseball where you say you're going to be expected back on a certain date and it doesn't happen. So to be able to do that, does it say more about, I think, knowing that the injury was severe enough to where you needed maybe a day or two, but knowing that that was the allowance you had on the injured list?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was partly about doing the right thing for the health of the season and taking the days, but also just understanding that, you know, knowing your body and knowing that, you know, if you give it a few extra days and work back in the right progression, that you're going to have a chance to kind of be back on that first possible day.
Biggest question we have right now, and we don't seem to have a consensus answer. Maybe you can give us an insight. Where will you be hitting in this batting order? Because we were told you'd be the leadoff guy when you came back, but then Jed Hoyer this morning kind of sounded like there was going to be some type of discussion.
Yeah, I guess we'll all know when the lineup's announced.
All right. I think it also just says a lot about how it's been producing, where you've talked about it before. We have talked about it before many times. This is a 1-9 type of lineup when it comes to who can do what on a given day. What did you observe while you were out that really was encouraging to see? And obviously PCA trying to do the job, holding it down in your stead.
Yeah, I just think all the way through the lineup, I think the quality of the bats and the ability, whether it being scoring early and giving ourselves a chance to be up or being down in a couple of those games. And always this lineup is pretty special in the fact that you always feel like you're going to be in it. You're always going to, whether it's fifth or sixth or seventh inning, we feel like we're going to score and make it a game. I think you saw it last night. And so I think that's kind of been the most impressive thing watching the group and being part of it, is that you never feel like you're out of a baseball game.
When you left the lineup, Matt Shaw wasn't in it, but he's back and batting ninth last night, had a nice day, could have had what could have been a game-winning RBI double, but of course the Marlins were able to come back in the bottom of the ninth. What do you think about Matt Shaw's new non-leg kick, I guess is what we're calling it, because it's a different approach than he had the last time we saw him in the bigs, and something he obviously worked on down in the minors.
Yeah, I think just you get that feedback from the league about your swing and kind of where they're beating you up a little bit. And so for him to go down there and make some tweaks, yeah, I think everybody does that throughout their career of figuring out how to simplify the move and get to a place where you can handle more pitches at this level. And, you know, he comes back into a game where you get a right on right 93 to 96 mile an hour change up with a guy throwing a 97, 98 mile an hour sinker in on his hands and two breaking balls. And it's just, that's the caliber of talent, the big leagues right now. It's doesn't let up, and it's relentless. And so for him to go out there yesterday, get a couple hits, an extra base hit, and kind of fit right back in. He made some great plays at third base too. We all believe in him, and we all think he's going to be a big part of this lineup. So it's good to see and good to have him back.
You've been through that process of being up and then having to go back down and come back up. I'm just curious, what was the most valuable part of that experience for you, and what do you think he's going through in that same type of process?
Yeah, it was probably a little bit different. Just, you know, he had the way that it worked for me, right, was it was a year and a half in the big leagues and then going back down. I think what I learned, besides a few little tweaks and understanding, just believing in myself and getting to a point. I was down for a long time and was frustrated and had to get to a place where just really started believing in myself again and trusting that I could do it at the highest level. I miss the guys. I miss the guys. I miss being around it. I miss competing at this level. And with that group that I had spent, almost 2 years with, to be back with them and back competing was the biggest thing that I missed. I think for Maddie, just the understanding, getting that taste of the big leagues and understanding what he needed to do a little bit differently or a little bit better. And then you can see the adjustments and we're all pulling for him to just continue having that confidence and the belief that you could do it.
This segment with Ian Happ is brought to you by Finishing Chicago. Great finishes start with contractors from finishingchicago.com. And now, unfortunately, we hear from Craig Counsell last night, Ian, that Porter Hodge is going on the injured list with an oblique. I don't think they're contagious, but I know, having just come off of it, what do you think he's dealing with from a pitching standpoint? You mentioned torque last time. It's the same with him, I imagine.
Yeah. It was a little bit different. Just when you're a hitter, you can... or position player, you can do things to kind of mitigate or hey, I know I can swing at 80 or 90%, or I know that this one thing might bug it a little bit, but I can manage it. Like pitching, it's a full effort every single time. And if you're not at 100% and your stuff ticks down, it gets really hard to compete. I don't think it's like crazy serious. I think we're gonna see him back and not too long, but being intelligent about making sure that it doesn't do something that it's either competing in the game at a kind of without his best stuff or something that could get worse and potentially we don't have him for a long time. So he's gonna get right and he'll be back before we know it. But I think and having those options in the bullpen, it's tough when you have a situation where the bullpen's a little short and you're staying because guys throw back to back and then you have to stay away from guys. And before you know it, you don't have a ton of options. So, he'll be back soon. And he'll get it right. And he's just a huge part of the back end of our bullpen.
Yeah. He's done a tremendous job. Marshall and I, in the last segment, we're trying to figure out how they put that together. I want to ask you a question too about how the outfield plays in Miami, Marlins Park, Lone Depot Park, whatever you want to call it. It looks massive on TV.
Yeah.
It is big. Like that actually playing too, because sometimes it's different being there in person, but it looks like you guys are playing in an ocean.
Yeah, it's big out there. There's a lot of room. I think left center especially is a really big part of the park. It still flies a little bit down the lines and you definitely see guys hit homers there, but it's big. And I think it's a really good place. You're going to see Pete run around out there. It's a great place for him. It's just communicating and like understanding that in that spot that there's the left center gap, you're kind of giving the left center gap the respect because there's just a lot of room to roam and a little bit different from Wrigley in that sense.
Pete's going to burn off some energy.
Yeah, seems like a lot. We were joined by Cubs Gold Glove outfielder Ian Happ, who is also the co-host of the Compound Podcast. Of course, that's part of Odyssey Sports. New episodes dropping each Wednesday, that's tomorrow, with the latest discussion on the Cubs and baseball. Download and listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Ian, your reaction there leads to another question. What's your favorite and least favorite ballpark to play left field in outside of Wrigley Field?
I think least favorite, Houston. Houston's a crazy one with the Crawford boxes and then kind of that corner where you're running around. But I think favorite is a good one outside of Wrigley. I think Pittsburgh's got a lot of room to roam and left. It's 420 to left center, so plenty of opportunities to go make plays there.
It's just a beautiful ballpark, too. I know we've talked about it. I also want to point out our live broadcast at Brickhouse in Wrigleyville with special guest, one Ian Happ, is next Wednesday, May 28th, and it is brought to you by Verizon. Ian, I also want to know what it was like to observe Crosstown since you weren't having to play. Did you see enough people in Pope costumes? What was the vibe like just not playing but observing, you know, from the dugout?
Yeah, it's always great. I mean, the energy in the stadium was fantastic. You know, winning games helps that. But it was cool what Major League Baseball did, but the rivalry week and having that across the league, I thought that was an interesting concept. And I know attendance was really good around baseball. But, yeah, it's always special, and it's always special to be a part of that. And I think we took back the winning record for the total series, right?
Mm-hmm.
75-74 all time.
Yes.
Go Cubbies.
I do think you bring up a good point, though, because baseball marketed something, and look, there were results. Maybe they should try that more often.
Yeah, and I think the interesting part about it is you're always going to get, you know, whether it's Cubs, Cardinals, or Yankees, Red Sox, like, there was some talk about, you know, well, why aren't those that I have? Those are always going to get views, and you're always going to get people that are excited to come to those games. So for Major League Baseball to do the, you know, all the teams that are closest to each other and have the inner city matchups and do that over the course of one weekend, I thought was a really cool concept and something that I hope they keep doing. So just little things to market the game like that and get people excited are great. And you know, baseball is in a healthy spot right now, and it's fun to see.
Yeah. The rivalry weekend thing has been interesting. They talked about the attendances around baseball, and even though some of those rivalries don't make sense, except for if you follow baseball, like the Red Sox and the Braves don't make sense unless you've been following interleague since it started, because they do play every year. What is your favorite rivalry outside of the White Sox and in division? Like, is there another team outside of the division, not the White Sox, that you enjoy seeing?
Oh, that's a good one. Outside division, I'm trying to think of like who we've played a lot, or I mean, I think the one in recent years, I think because it hasn't happened much, is just when the Yankees come to town. I think two historic franchises, and it's really fun, you know, whether we go to New York or they come to us, now that we're doing it every year. I think that's been pretty special in the last few years to just see the Cub fans show up in New York, and then see when the Yankees come to town. As people are excited to see those players and for the franchise to get together. So that's been a really fun one.
And Speaking of that, I know Chris Chelios, we joked that he may have broken some news at the seventh inning stretch on Sunday, but we are trying to figure out what former Yankee, former Cub, of course, Anthony Rizzo is going to do. You heard anything? Is there anything that you know, or maybe what you've estimated? Just Chelly brought it up, you know, to everybody watching at the ballpark, and he's right. It's a topic people want to know about.
Yeah. You know, I think so. Riz did the Apple TV, and, you know, he's going to be a staple in Chicago. He's going to be somebody that's immortalized there, and it's been so important, especially the franchise. And I think it was a cool moment, actually, to be out there and what Shelley did. And I think, you know, 44 is going to be – I don't know if anybody's going to wear that number again. It's his legacy in Chicago, you know, what he meant to me as a player. And excited to have him back around the organization at some point, and you know, whether that's soon or in the future. It just, when his name's brought up, the way that the fans react to what he's meant is truly special. And you know, he's going to be one of those legends of the game that's just going to be beloved for the rest of his life in Chicago, and that's a special thing.
Love that. Very, very diplomatic way of putting, saying you don't know, or at least telling us. That was great, Ian. Thank you so much. We're also looking forward to not only your appearance next week, but the Compound Live podcast. That is at Music Box Theater on Saturday, May 31st. Compound Live with special guest P. Crow Armstrong. I have a feeling that's going to get fun and high energy. Get tickets at musicboxtheater.com. Anything else? Yeah, we connect? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, with the live show, we're not going to record the whole thing. So, like, if you want to experience it, if you want to see it, it's not going to be on YouTube or anything later. It's going to be a really intimate, like, live experience. And we're excited to have Pete. You know, he's going to be with us the whole time. And it's going to be a lot of fun. The tickets are on sale at musicboxtheater.com. Like you said, we're going to be tweeting out the links and putting them out there so people can see it. But we're getting close to capacity, so we're fired up for it.
And then Cold Brew Season, of course, it's Steingold's, and you
Cold
can
Brew
get
Season.
Connect. Yeah.
It's that time of year. Everybody get their canned cold brew, and we got the keg in the clubhouse now too. We got the cans and the keg, so we got cold brew everywhere flying around the clubhouse.
Cold brew in a keg?
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, like the nitro. So we got it on tap.
Has somebody done a cold brew keg stand?
Oh
no, not yet. Maybe we can arrange that. JMO might do that.
That would be a difficult lift, but I have faith that you guys could do it.
We got some strong guys. Figure it out.
I love this.
I think they can figure that out.
He's really tall. Okay, I'm thinking about the leverage here. It's difficult.
No, I can see it. I can literally picture it right now.
I love it. We'll figure it out, Ian. We'll volunteer as tribute. I've done bass and cheerleading stunts before.
Layla is volunteering as tribute, to be clear, Ian. I'm not volunteering for that.
As long as I'm insurance cleared, I'm good. Ian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much. Have a good one.
Good luck today as well. Back Thanks, in the lineup, Ian. We know we're back eligible for the Cubs. That's great to see.
I want to remind people they can join our guy, Mark Grody, from 1 to 3 p.m. this Thursday at the Verizon store at 630 Grand Avenue in Gurnee. Three pairs of tickets will be given away to Cubs on Deck on May 28th at Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern in Wrigleyville with special guest Ian Happ. Cubs on Deck, powered by Verizon. Learn more about Verizon's deals for Military Appreciation Month at your local Verizon store.
Yeah, we appreciate our military, and I appreciate everybody who texted in yesterday. We had some servicemen text in, so thank you for your service every single day. Halftime is coming up next on Raheem and Harris. America's most famous gator may have passed away. Not an athlete.
Okay.
Actual gator.
I just wanted to let people know about some programming news on a childhood favorite.
What time is it?
It's halftime.
It is halftime, and we don't have a lot of time because we were talking to Ian Happ. We also talked about what Jed Hoyer had to say on Mully and Haw. That was at 9 this morning. If you want to hear it in full, you can go back, listen on the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app. We talked about the news about the Bears extending Joe Tooney. Ryan Poles told you it was a priority. Well, it got done, and it looks like it's for less money under the cap this year than originally thought. So that's good news, too. And then what the Bears are going to do about it, a report from SI talking about what their options were trade-wise to try to get Travion Henderson at the second round pick with the Patriots. So that's all we discussed earlier today, and now it is time for halftime.
It's halftime.
Let's pay our respects to one of the most famous alligators that ever did live, the alligator from Happy Gilmore. It was an actual real alligator, the one who ate Chubbs' hand. Sad that he ate Chubbs' hand.
See, I when you said the most famous alligator, that was the first one that came to my mind, so I'm happy.
Is it really?
Right.
Well,
yes.
I mean, otherwise it'd be like Steve Spurrier or something.
Yes, exactly.
Billy Donovan, you know.
Do they have a live gator?
Joakim Noah.
I don't think they do. Let me look that up. Do they have a live gator mascot for Florida?
If they did, that seems
like a liability.
Like, it's one thing to have Mike the Tiger from LSU or Ralphie the Buffalo or Bevo. Or Baylor even has bears, which is why I think that all bears are cute and fuzzy. But I think to have an actual gator, like, would he be on a leash? How would that work? He'd just hiss at people?
I just think it's all trouble anytime you're bringing a live animal into the mix, and I wish people just wouldn't do it.
Well, get this. Morris, the gator who was in this movie, his name was Morris. He's 80 years old when he passed away. He died at the Colorado Gator Farm. He was nearly 11 feet long and weighed 640 pounds. Hmm. Can you imagine? I can't. And then to be famous and to have the name Morris, this sounds like a good life.
Are we really doing this?
Taps for Morris.
Also, as to the Florida thing, they used to have a live gator back in 1970, but now they just have Albert and Alberta, who are dressed up in costumes, male and female gators.
I wonder if an incident led to the change.
Maybe a missing hand.
He's slowly getting after you. Morris was also in Empire interview with the vampire.
Also,
I didn't know that. And he was in Night Court and Blues Brothers 2000.
Oh, this is like a show gator for real.
Yeah, he's a famous show gator.
A gator with an IMDb page.
A gator with an IMDb page.
R.I.P. to Morris.
Yeah, so speaking of animals, well, I guess these aren't really animals. They're, well, some of them are animals.
Go on.
Sesame Street is back. Its deal with Warner Brothers was up, getting taken off HBO, Max, HBO, whatever they call themselves. But now Netflix has picked up Sesame Street.
The letter of the day is N for Netflix.
So there's a new deal that has been announced. And the 56th season of this is going to run. And new deals will... So here's how it used to work. Warner Brothers Discovery had new episodes that would run on Max and then on PBS months later. But now PBS stations and PBS Kids will air new episodes on the same day and date that they're streamed on Netflix.
Aww.
Bringing, quote, critical early learning to children throughout the country for free.
Take that.
I like that.
Keepers of information.
So this is a big announcement because I don't know if you guys know, but people are wondering if Sesame Street wasn't going to make it. But now they got a new distribution deal and Sesame Street, Big Bird and the gang, Snuffleupagus. Who's your favorite Sesame Street character?
Big Bird, I'm wearing yellow.
It's definitely Oscar. I mean, it's definitely Oscar.
For you?
I mean, is it two chalk? Was it just Elmo? I think Elmo has to be the pick.
Did you say two chalk?
Yeah, like in this draft. I don't. You know, you guys went for the deep cuts, but I think Elmo, I mean, like he's 1-1.
Deep cut is Big Bird. He's a 10-foot bird.
So yeah, I'm going Big Bird.
Big Bird is not the star. It's Elmo.
Not Bert, not Ernie, not Snuffleupagus.
What about those two count. Monsters that say Menomina? Do, 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 do.
Menomina.
Do, 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 do.
My favorite character on Sesame Street.
I think they were Muppet Show.
Is Oscar actually. Because he has a whole house underneath that garbage can. I like the digs. But second favorite, it's got to be Rocco. Because Rocco is out here causing problems.
Who's on your Sesame Street Mount Rushmore?
Meatball machine.
I think it goes Rocco. It goes Oscar the Grouch. And then I'll probably give it up to Big Bird because he's just the goat. And I guess Elmo gets on there,
Give
too.
Me the count as well. He's on my draft.
Yo, the count is, yeah.
Are you kidding? It's basically what we do every day.
The count is that guy.
Shout out to the original Maria on Sesame Street. Sonia Manzano. She has her own animated show on PBS currently, Alma's Way. So,
wow,
there you go.
Do you remember when PBS. Elmo asked how everybody was doing on Twitter and the answer was not good?
Yeah, I do remember that.
That was depressing.
That was a little bit depressing.
But true, Elmo. True. I'm glad to hear it. Sesame Street deserves all its flowers. So I'm glad to hear that it is going to stay on. That's good news for sure. We have more coming up next. It is time for Five on It, where we have a lot of pressing questions today. Pressing. Including one that involves the Olympics somehow in an unlikely manner. That is next.